Here at Fight the New Drug, we talk a lot about the impact pornography can have on mental health, relationships, sexual health, and the world around us. And if you've felt that impact personally, it's important to know this. You're not alone. That's why Relay exists. Relay is an app designed to give you real support as you work toward lasting change. It connects you with a small, private group of people who understand what you're going through, people who show up when it matters. Relay isn't about shame or judgment. It's about accountability, encouragement, and learning how to move forward together. And if anonymity matters to you, Relay has you covered. No names, just support. If you're ready to stop doing this alone, try Relay for free today at ftnd.org/joinrelay. Can I be honest for a second? A lot of people who listen to this podcast already know they want to quit porn. That's not the problem. The problem is doing it consistently, when no one's watching, when it's difficult, when it's late, when you're stressed. Instead of just relying on willpower, rely on our friends at Relay. Relay gives you structure, tools, support, connection. So you're not fighting alone and starting over every week. If that sounds like what you've been missing, check it out at ftnd.org/joinrelay.
Struggling with compulsive sexual behavior or betrayal trauma can feel isolating, not just for individuals, but for partners and families too. But healing is possible, and you don't have to navigate it alone. From June 25th through the 27th in Nashville, Tennessee, the Hope for Healing Conference brings together individuals in recovery, partners, couples, and professionals for 3 days of expert insights, meaningful conversations, and real connection. You'll hear from experienced voices in the field, gain practical tools for healing, and connect with others who understand what this journey can look like. Whether you're seeking support personally or professionally, this space is designed to meet you where you are. To learn more or register, visit csbdhopeforhealing.org and use code PODCAST25 for 25% off.
Okay, real talk. Shopping doesn't always boost your confidence. Sometimes you just want to put something on and think, yes, this is me. That's why Stitch Fix works. You take a quick style quiz, size, budget, what you're into, and a real human stylist sends pieces picked just for you. Try everything on at home. Keep what you love, send back the rest. Shipping's free, no subscription required. Get $20 off at stitchfix.com/podcast.
In today's episode of Consider Before Consuming, we're joined by Dr. Nicholas Lawless, a clinical psychologist and couples therapist who works closely with individuals and couples navigating the impact of pornography on relationships. In this conversation, we explore how relationships are shaped by where our attention goes, and how even subtle shifts in focus can either strengthen connection or lead to disconnection over time. Dr. Lawless shares both research insights and real experiences from his work with couples, helping break down how porn can influence expectations, intimacy, and relationship dynamics. We also talk about the impact on partners, why porn can feel like a betrayal in some relationships, and what it looks like to begin rebuilding trust and connection. With that, let's jump in. We hope you enjoy this episode of Consider Before Consuming.
Well, Nick, thank you so much for joining me today on Consider Before Consuming. To get started, can you share with our listeners a little bit about who you are and the work that you do?
Sure. Thanks, Natalie. So my name's Nick. I am a clinical psychologist and couple therapist running my own private practice in Melbourne, Australia. I work a lot with individuals who struggle with all forms of sexual addiction, pornography included. I use that term loosely, knowing that it's not a technical diagnosis. Compulsive sexual behavior disorder is what we'd be kind of actually talking about clinically, but people don't know what that means. So sexual addiction is kind of what we refer to it colloquially as. I also work a lot with couples who are struggling in this area. be that one of them has, you know, been struggling with pornography use or some other form of sexual addiction, and the other one's just found out, betrayal, trauma, etc. So I'm in this space a lot, infidelity in general, because it often branches into that space. And just this year started to work with groups as well of men struggling with sexual addiction, which is new for me, but has been very powerful.
Yeah, amazing. You're really seeing this issue, how pornography affects relationships from all facets. And I'm so excited to get to have this conversation with you today. Before we dive into talking about some of the research you've done and your experience, what first drew you to studying romantic relationships and the role that pornography can play in them?
Sure. So when I was kind of trying to work out what path I wanted to head down, I wanted to do something that would make a real difference to the world, to people's lives. And I was trying to think, you know, what's the way I can make the biggest impact, essentially, was my thought process. And I went, people's mental health, right? Like, yep, I could be a doctor or something and help people with their broken leg, but, you know, you could be really happy with your broken leg. I mean, yeah, it impacts you absolutely and whatnot, but you know, there are lots of people that are physically very well and very miserable regardless. So I went, okay, psychology is kind of the path, and went down that path and you know, the many years of study and whatnot. But I also had a particular kind of pull towards working with couples, because when I'm thinking about mental health, I'm thinking, well, what impacts mental health more than anything else? Relationships, and in particular your romantic relationships. We know kind of the biggest predictor of people's mental health, quality of life. So I wanted to get into this couple therapy space. And when I finally got qualified and I was working with individuals, but then couples as well, what I found a lot of were couples who were using a lot of porn and having next to or no sex. And so this high porn, no sex kind of dynamic seemed to be playing out across almost all the couples that I was seeing. And at that point, I was not in any way specifically, you know, specializing in this field or this area any more than anybody else. And so when I got the opportunity to do a PhD, and it happened to be, you know, I was working with a relationship researcher. So I was like, great, I want to be a part of this. And then he said, what do you want to kind of do your thesis on? It was like, well, I'm really curious about the interplay between porn and sex and relationship functioning, sexual functioning in general, and how this impacts relationships overall. So that's kind of how I ended up in that space.
Yeah. And your relationship research and the work that you've done studying couples is so important. And I'm excited for our listeners to get to hear a little bit about that. So can you tell us a bit about what you've learned about outside influences or some of the most common ways that outside influences are affecting relationships?
From my research perspective, one of the things that I looked at was people's sexual system, and how that is kind of wired to operate in a relationship. And essentially the theory goes that, you know, we have this sexual system inbuilt in us for the purpose of relationship, as well as procreation, obviously, and reproduction and the continuation of the human race. But it's more than that. It's more than just, you know, baby making. There is a real unitive aspect to sex in general. And so one of the things that I was curious about, particularly given that background with the no sex and the high porn, was what's going on with people's sexual system here, and how does that play out in terms of relationships? So when we started to look at sexual arousal, which is like an indicator that your sexual system is activated, we started to kind of go, okay, well, you know, it's clearly being activated by porn, which is sexually arousing material. It's not being activated by the partner, given the lack of sex that, you know, these people are having. So, you know, does it still play out the same? How does that mess with the unitive kind of aspect of this sexual system? And so that's kind of where the research started.
Yeah. You often describe relationships as moving either toward connection or toward disconnection. What are some of the more subtle ways that couples might start drifting toward disconnection without even realizing it?
I want to highlight a word that was used in the Brain Heart World series that you guys put out there, which I thought was fantastic, and which, by the way, I watched after, you know, all of this kind of research that I was doing, but which I think fit really beautifully with it, and that was the word focus.
Yeah.
And I think when people's focus starts to shift away from their partner and towards whatever it might be, you know, that might be work, it might be, you know, the kids, you know, so often that happens when kids come along and people's focus shifts, or in the instance of porn, right, or, you know, anybody else that they find attractive, that's where things start to kind of fall off and the disconnection starts to grow. So if you start to notice that focus, like, you know, you're not really thinking a whole lot about your partner, or they're starting to feel a little bit unseen or forgotten or unheard, not really important, warning signs, you know, that's start to do something about it.
Yeah. It's like the grass is greenest where you water it, right? Where your attention is going, that's where the impact is going to be.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And for any of our listeners who haven't heard of our Brain Heart World documentary series that Nick mentioned, where we talk about how love is focus and how pornography is something that can pull you away from that focus, you can watch that for free online at brainheartworld.org or on our website, fightthenewdrug.org as well.
And just a, you know, a quick plug, you haven't set me up for this or anything, but I do highly recommend that. I think it was really, really good. And again, listening to it after doing all this research, it was really refreshing to go, oh, like, there's nothing that you said in any of that that was, you know, wrong. It all fit with the research and everything that's out there. So, and it's actually very engaging. It's pretty high quality production. So, you did a good job.
Thank you so much for that. And I hope our listeners will take this opportunity to watch that and look into some of your research as well. We just talked about disconnection and how porn and where your focus is can pull you away. On the flip side of that, what tends to help couples stay connected or rebuild that sense of connection?
Yeah, well, let's roll with the same idea, right? This idea of focus, right? Turning your attention back towards each other. And I would say there's something about when you turn your focus away, there is a sense of like missing out on something in a relationship. Like you're not sharing everything when your attention turns to other things. One of the things that we can do when it comes to, you know, just connection, for instance, is just talking. Now, that sounds really basic, but the amount of couples that don't talk or don't talk about anything meaningful, more specifically, that is a recipe for disconnection. So to actually start to connect, to start to open up, and you see that a lot in couple therapy when people start to actually go like, wow, I had no idea that this was going on for you, like that's how you saw things, that this is what was going on. All of a sudden, you have something to connect over, right? You can actually see the person for who they are, they're in their entirety. So look, that's a very basic starting point, but I think it's worth starting there.
Yeah, I think it is too, because I think so often when we have these conversations of where people are feeling like, okay, I'm not having intimacy in my relationship, I'm not having sex in my relationship, they don't zoom all the way out to think of where that disconnection might be starting. And so I think it's worth mentioning just a lot of that has nothing to do with sex actually or intimacy, but that connection and building that safety in intimacy elsewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I mean, you see it all the time with couples, this dynamic between, you know, like, I don't want to have sex with you because, you know, I don't feel emotionally connected to you. It doesn't feel safe. And yeah, too often we go, okay, well, I don't know how to do that bit, so I'll just go on and try and meet my needs elsewhere.
Yeah. Why do you think the idea of how our attention can be directed either toward our partner or away from our partner hasn't been talked about more in conversations around porn and relationships?
It's a good question. I think the intersection between different kind of domains of research, if you like, different fields. There's a number of fields that kind of coalesced around my thesis topic, which did make it quite confusing at times and hard to kind of integrate it all. Because, you know, it's romantic relationship literature, isn't it? Well, it's kind of social psychology. Actually, it's kind of the sex literature, right? Well, it's all of them. And usually researchers kind of fall in one of those camps more than the others. And so there's a bit of biology kind of going on. There's a bit of psychology. There's definitely some social elements to it. That's where I think maybe there's been a bit of a lack of trying to kind of bring those fields together. Because I wasn't especially wedded to either one of those to begin with, you know, I was fresh, if you like. I think I didn't really notice that there was actually any sort of a difficulty there until I was right in it. And well, I kept going, obviously, with once I was there. But I think that might be part of the reason why we haven't really tied it all together like this before.
Yeah, that makes sense. In your research, you also talk about how porn can shape expectations. What kinds of expectations are people picking up, often without realizing it, from pornography? And how can those expectations start to create tension or dissatisfaction in real relationships?
Absolutely. So where do we start? There's so many different expectations that kind of come from porn. Yeah, look, the broader ones that I won't go into a whole lot of detail with, you know, we know that, you know, violence in pornography feeds into expectations and attitudes and also behaviors when it comes to how appropriate violence is in real relationships and sexual contexts. We know that infidelity is a big thing as well. It's such a fantasy for so many people that it becomes like it's a full genre when it comes to pornography, and that can feed into real relationships, absolutely. But I think more broadly than that, right, for those people who kind of go, okay, well, I'm not looking at the violent stuff. I don't look at infidelity, you know, I just look at the good stuff, the healthy stuff, the more natural stuff, that kind of thing. There is still a focus on self just by virtue of what you're doing with the porn. So take away whatever's being shown by it in the content. You are using these other people for your own game. And that is not a very healthy kind of approach to relationships from the get-go. So just by virtue of that, that's one thing that I'd mention. But over and above that, there's this emphasis when it comes to pornography and everything that's kind of depicted in it, that the focus is on, it's not on relationship, but that's the reality. The focus is on the mechanics, the performance, the practical, literal act or acts that are being depicted for people's sexual gratification rather than the relationship, the connection, the unitive aspect that we were talking about before. There is a lack of that. And so when it comes to actual real sexual relationships, right, the expectation is not there that we're going to feel close and connected and we're going to talk about things beforehand and, you know, build some emotional safety. It's kind of like, no, when I want this, you're going to be there and we're going to have sex and it's going to be mind-blowingly, you know, pleasurable and everyone's going to love everything that, you know, happens, no matter how full-on or extreme it might be.
Right.
Yeah, I could keep going, but I think I branched into a few different topics there.
Yeah, I want to double click into one of the topics you brought up. Something really important about your research is that you talk about, you know, a lot of the other research about pornography's harms speaks to the content in pornography, speaks to, as you mentioned, that it's violent, that it's graphic. We know how that influences young people. We know how that influences expectations. But something really important about your research is that, as you mentioned, content aside, the act of engaging with pornography can still harm relationships. Can you dive a little deeper into that idea for
us? Absolutely. I would love to. This comes back to, we kind of alluded to it before without really getting into it. And I appreciate it. I didn't realize that at the time. But what my research kind of looked at is that when you are aroused by people that are not your partner, and in some instances, and obviously every time we use porn, we're being aroused by someone that's not our partner, that very arousal has an impact on the relationship. And it does that because that sexual system that we spoke about before, of which sexual arousal is just a part, it is directed towards the target of that sexual arousal. So it's not a case that, you know, you get aroused by porn and then you can go, okay, I'm just going to direct all of that arousal towards my partner. You know, that's a plausible explanation. But we tested it, literally, in the research. We had hypotheses around that, and that's certainly not what we found across multiple studies and many hundreds of people. What we found is that when you are aroused by somebody that's not your partner, your focus, your attention, your motivations, your behavior is directed towards the object of your sexual arousal, the sexually arousing stimulus. And obviously, in the case of porn, that's not your partner. That's away from your partner. So the way that I kind of frame it sometimes for people is that you can always think of sexual arousal like a magnet. And if you point, if it's kind of being pointed towards porn or anybody else that's not your partner for that matter, it will pull you towards those people and therefore away from your partner. Whereas we found on the opposite, right, direct it towards your partner. And it'll actually draw you towards them, which is obviously what people want in a romantic relationship.
Yeah. I'm so curious from your perspective with the research you've done, we are often asked, is pornography cheating? Is watching pornography cheating? And we have a response to that that we've shared, but I would be curious to know how you would respond to that with this idea of connection and disconnection, what your thoughts are there.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, certainly I would have a lot of partners that would be very much arguing that watching porn is cheating and they're dealing with the betrayal trauma as a result. So that's very, very real. And I certainly don't want to take away from that at all. I would be suggesting that if you are not, anytime you are throwing in your efforts, your energies, your attention, your focus, your time into things that are not going to be good for the relationship, then in some way you're doing the relationship a disservice, absolutely. And if those things are things that, you know, in your understanding of your relationship should be kind of solely for your relationship, i.e. like your sexual system, right? If you go, you know, I wouldn't want my sexual system directed towards anybody else, like, because that's unique for us, like, that's why we're in this relationship, then if you're watching porn, you're doing that. So absolutely, I think in those instances, it would be akin to cheating. And to give a comparison, maybe, just for those who feel uncomfortable about that response, maybe. So let's say there's a couple where one of them has a very close emotional connection with someone of the opposite sex. They're a heterosexual couple. And they share a lot, right? They share their feelings. They, you know, spend a lot of time talking and connecting and whatnot. That, to some people, will be okay. You know, the other person will feel okay with that. That doesn't necessarily mean it's not having a negative impact on the relationship. So that's the other thing. Like, whether we call it cheating or not, that doesn't mean it's not having a negative impact on the relationship. In the same way as that emotional connection with somebody when, you know, ideally, we want that emotional connection with your partner is possibly having a negative impact on the relationship without you even realizing it, even if the partner doesn't have an issue with it. And I see that a lot as well, where couples come in and they go, well, everybody uses porn, don't they? That kind of thing. You know, I can't be upset at them for it, can I? Like, or, you know, it doesn't bother me kind of thing. That doesn't mean that it's not actually pulling you away from your partner.
Yeah. I would love to, just for anyone who feels like maybe porn hasn't really affected their relationship, what are some of those things that they may not be considering?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially what we found with my research, and that doesn't mean there's not other things there, but these are the things that we saw play out with couples. when you use porn, the more aroused you are by it, the more often you are aroused by it, the more likely you are to pay attention to attractive alternatives. And that's a technical term for other people that aren't your partner. The more likely you are to see those people as viable options. So like to actually consider them as like a relationship partner or a sexual partner. The more likely you are to engage in infidelity. Surprise, surprise, given those first two I just mentioned. So straight away sexually, we know that. We also know you're more likely to sexually objectify other people that aren't your partner. The outside of the sexual component, though, you're actually more likely to engage in destructive conflict with your partner. You're more likely to be kind of aggressive and domineering. And again, that's not about a content thing. That's just by virtue of like there's a disconnection process going on here. You're more likely to neglect your partner's feelings and needs. Those things are obviously outside of the bedroom, right? There's nothing sexual per se about those things, but that is one of the things that we found. And so we did this really cool study, which is yet to be published, but hopefully in the not too distant future, where essentially we were able to, given the all of the stats that we were able to kind of come up with and the analyses that we ran, we did something called a causal mediation analysis, where essentially we can, because of what we do with the stats behind the scenes, can replicate an experiment that we couldn't possibly run in the real world, where we were able to go, okay, so if we increase people's arousal to porn by X amount on this scale, what happens at the next time point to their engagement in these relationship disconnection processes? And then what happens at a later time point following that to their relationship well-being overall, so their relationship quality and stability and sexual satisfaction. And what we found is that you increase that porn arousal at baseline. A month later, there is an increase in relationship disconnection processes, the ones that I just mentioned. And then a month after that, there is a decrease in relationship well-being. So this causes that over time. And because of the statistical analyses and the way that it's able to control for so many different variables, I can't remember how many we had now, 9 different control variables, something like that. You're able to kind of say with some level of confidence that this caused this, which caused that. Actually, an increase in porn arousal increases your relationship disconnection processes, your engagement in those behaviors, which will have a flow-on effect to your relationship well-being down the track.
Hey, just be honest for a second. How many times have you said that was the last time you'd watch porn? And meant it? Yeah. You're not alone. Quitting can be difficult, but it doesn't have to be. Relay is a recovery program that helps you actually break the cycle with structure, support, and real accountability. So it's not just you in your own head trying again and again. If you're ready for something different, head to ftnd.org/joinrelay and try Relay for free.
This episode is sponsored by Garden. Groceries are getting more expensive and somehow less fresh. If you're tired of throwing away wilted greens and overpaying for produce that doesn't last, it's time to grow your own. Meet Garden. It's a sleek, soil-free indoor growing system that does the hard work for you. Using automated light and water, Garden grows fresh, clean food in your living room or kitchen all year long. No dirt, no daily chores, no green thumb required. Stop planning your life around grocery runs. Just harvest what you need when you need it. Visit mygarden.com. That's mygardyn.com. Garden. Harvest happiness.
Yeah, which is so important because so many people think it's the disconnection in their relationship that drives them to pornography in the first place because, you know, well, my partner doesn't want to be intimate with me, so I'll seek it out somewhere else. So that for many people is the the reason they believe they're consuming pornography in the first place. And then it's just interesting to see that actually it's kind of a cyclical process, but certainly that consumption is fueling this disconnection, which is just keeping us in that cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's true that it can go the other way. And sure. It's not something that I looked at in my research per se as to like how does, you know, the relationship well-being being not right. great feed into porn arousal, for instance. But it's certainly something that we kind of considered and put out there as, yeah, absolutely, that's a viable thing as well. And it is something that I see in my practice when things, you know, people come in and they go, you know, like I wasn't using porn at all. And then, you know, we stopped having sex and then I started using porn again. So it's possible. It can absolutely happen, sure. go the other way, but that doesn't take away from the fact that, yes, it then just builds on the disconnection. It doesn't make it better.
Right. And also, you know, really taking that one step further to say, okay, well, if you stopped having sex, why did you stop having sex? Likely because there was some disconnection in the first place. And so it's really going back to this idea that you've said many times, relationships are either your actions are moving you toward connection or toward disconnection. And so if we keep building on the disconnection and getting further and further, then we'll find ourselves in that very disconnected place. And when we look at what we know about the way pornography affects the brain, with a compulsive habit, with frequent consumption, it's often those watching pornography will need it more often and a more hardcore version of it to kind of get that same gratification or that same arousal in the brain. And so with that escalating and then this continued behavior, fueling this disconnection, it's certainly, as you mentioned, harming the relationship.
Yeah. It's just adding more pain on in some respects.
Yeah.
Right? In the same ways, you know, you're struggling to emotionally connect. So let's just, you know, get smashed. And that'll help me kind of with my emotions. Well, sure, it'll help you in that moment right. with your emotions, but it will not help your connection over time. In fact, it's just adding more issues to the relationship, not less.
Right. When someone starts to recognize that there is that disconnection in their relationship, what are some of the first steps they can take to reverse that?
I mentioned before talking, and it's the first thing that I would be starting with, talking to your partner about how you're feeling, the fact that you are feeling disconnected in the first place. First step, 100%. The second thing, and this is like, okay, talk to your partner. Sometimes that's enough. They didn't realize, they didn't know. You can come up with kind of a solution to reconnect. If you are not sure what the heck to do about it though, right, you share it with them and they go, well, now what? That's where I would suggest like therapy. And that might be individual therapy if you feel like a lot of it is kind of on you and kind of your own experiences, like maybe you struggle with, you know, emotional regulation or emotional expression. Maybe you've got a really long-standing compulsive behavior going on here to porn or something else. Or maybe it's couple therapy when you go, actually, neither of us really know how to do this. We just want to work on kind of the dynamic and how we can reconnect. I see it happen all the time. Like, it's definitely possible. You just got to be willing to actually do the work, do what it takes.
Yeah. In your research, are there any specific statistics or measurements that we haven't spoken about yet that you think are really interesting that you want to be sure to share today?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've shared about kind of what happens or what the research found as far as when there's porn involved and the disconnection and the impact, negative impact on relationship well-being. But what we also tested at the same time was what happens when we increase arousal to your partner. Like, this isn't about how the sexual system kind of goes wrong and it's all about the bad stuff. This is like, well, what is it kind of intended for, and how does that play out in relationships too? And obviously we're relational creatures, and so we had a look at that and how that impacts. So increasing sexual arousal at baseline, a month later increased what we called relationship connection processes, and then a month after that an increase in relationship well-being. And again, the same kind of definitions for those first two, but those relationship connection processes, this is interesting because, again, stuff in the bedroom and stuff out of the bedroom. So some of the stuff in the bedroom, so the frequency with which you had sex, the pleasure with which you had sex, the extent to which you were thinking about the other person and their experience of sex, so what we call like sexual communal strength, were some of the sexual kind of aspects that were part of that relationship connection process. But on top of that, your capacity to engage in constructive conflict, you know, your willingness to compromise, your perception of the other person. And that might sound like an outcome rather than a process per se, but what we think about our partner is actually a process. It's something that we can change, or, you know, for the better or for the worse. What we found is that the more aroused you are, yeah, sure, you find them more sexually attractive. We found that, absolutely. But you actually perceive them as more warm and also intelligent. Like, this is having an overall positive impact on how you view your partner, your thoughts about your partner. And then, yes, you're more likely to want to spend time together and to meet their needs, be kind to them, et cetera. So a number of in-bedroom and out-of-bedroom processes that are all leading to connection, trying to maintain, enhance that relationship with them, that unity of aspect, it played out when it came to the stats, very much so. And of course, the more you're doing those things, the better your relationship is in the end.
Yeah, which is so great to have research on that, because so often we're focused on these are the harms and this is the negative spiral it can put your relationship in. But it's so nice to be able to say these are very real, tangible ways that not consuming pornography can help your relationship and strengthen your relationship and your connection, which is really wonderful to have.
That's it. It's not all bad news. I'm certainly... some people, depending on kind of what they hear me talk about, either in a therapy context or outside of that, like, might get the impression that I'm like anti-sex.
Yeah.
Far from it, right? Sex is a fantastic, wonderful thing that so often, I mean, I do sex therapy with people trying to help them have better sex. And that is not just because sex is good in and of itself, but because it's just so fundamental to relationship well-being, which is. Yeah, what we're all about.
Yeah, we often say about our organization, obviously, we're specifically focused on educating and raising awareness on the harmful effects of pornography. But we often say we're anti-pornography because we're pro-sex. It's because we're pro-healthy intimacy and healthy relationships that we are anti-pornography, because we know the ways that it harms relationships. And more and more research, as yours has, just continues to validate what we've known from research and personal experiences for decades. I mean, pre-internet, but especially in this digital age that we're in today, people are experiencing really significant negative effects from this. And there are wonderful positive effects of overcoming this and not allowing or not having pornography be something that has control within your life and influence within your life.
Absolutely.
And we say that with all of the empathy and compassion for how difficult a struggle with pornography can be, certainly, which is something we also speak about often, and know that there are resources available to those struggling or partners of those struggling as well, to make sure that everyone is taken care of in the ways that they need to be throughout these journeys.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And maybe just building on that, yes, there are resources out there to help those people that are struggling in this space. And more than that, to kind of go a little bit further and go, this, in the same way as it can happen with other forms of infidelity, this, like, identifying this and working through it in a relationship can actually be the catalyst for a much greater relationship than you even thought was possible. The amount of times that somebody has, like, a couple has come in and gone, like, our relationship is better now than it was prior to the affair, better than it ever has been, even though there's this massive hurt, you know, and struggle, and, you know, we've got to overcome all of that and process all of that. That's all true. Like, it's not to take away from that at all, but to say, like, this isn't just like, so we'll get back to baseline kind of thing. Like, there is an opportunity here to be more intimate, more known, more seen than ever before if, you know, you're able to make the most of those resources and, like I say, do the work.
Yeah. And that's something we hear often from couples who have overcome this together, or individuals who've experienced that within their relationship, while also noting we've certainly heard from individuals who this impacted their relationship in ways that they were not safe or unable to pursue healing, or both partners were unwilling to do the work in the same way, whatever that looks like. And to know that that is also okay, right? There's not a right or wrong way for anyone to navigate this, but certainly noting that peeling back those layers and having honesty finally, and transparency on everything can certainly be that foundational starting point to build a stronger relationship within for those who choose.
Yeah, absolutely. Very true. We're wounded in relationships and we're healed in relationships. And whether that's that relationship, like you say, you know, it might not be depending on the circumstance, but there's so much goodness that can come from, starting the journey and working through it with someone, be that a therapist or your partner or all of the above. There's definitely hope.
Yeah. Can I ask you about non-romantic relationships? What do you see and how those relationships are affected? Friendships, parent-child relationships, you know, other types of relationships that are non-romantic. How are those impacted by pornography?
Yeah. So disclaimer that, you know, I didn't research this at all. So this is more, you know, just anecdotally from my clinical experience rather than anything that I looked at with the research. But I think there is definitely a tendency towards, or what I often see with individuals that are using this. So they're not in a relationship. They just come in and they know they're struggling with it and they're trying to do something about it, or they don't know and they're here for something else. And we happen to go, oh, wow, use a fair bit of porn. Okay. Like, what's going on there? So often it's being used as a coping mechanism, an emotion regulation tool, which, you know, it's a very powerful one of those version of those, but, it's not helping people to learn how to regulate their emotions. It's just medicating it, essentially.
Right.
You don't actually build tolerance to be able to sit with or healthily express that emotion in any form of relationship, be that, you know, your siblings, your friends, or your parents kind of thing. It just kind of helps to numb. And that in and of itself is the root of so many relational difficulties with different people, because either you're numbing and disconnected, or when you're not able to do that, you are totally dysregulated, and so not necessarily the nicest person to be around. It's not super great for relationships when, you know, you just cannot handle anything emotional, and so I think it certainly plays in that sense. It also plays in similar ways, like we spoke about those relationship disconnection processes. And yeah, we're looking at it in the context of those in relationships, but many of those things are not necessarily unique to relationships, like sexual objectification of others, for instance. It's very hard, and I've had many people report this to me, that it's very hard to have a good relationship with, again, I'm talking heterosexual people here, with the opposite sex when you're undressing them in your mind, right? When you only see them for their sexual value and nothing else. You don't see them as a person, you see them as an object, and that will impact your relationship with them, your capacity to connect with them, your capacity to love them, empathize with them, et cetera.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that. Is there anything else from your anecdotal experience working with so many clients or perspective that you have through this research and in the work that you've done that you'd like to share before we wrap up today?
Yeah, there are a lot of people who, probably the biggest conversation that I have with people in this space outside of what we've already spoken about today are those who don't think that their porn use is relevant to their mental health or their relationships. Either they can't see the connection, they don't see there's a problem with it, they think it's fine, they don't think it's impacting them, all those things. To those people, again, based on the research, like my research was not looking at what people thought about how it impacted on their relationship. When you look at that research, and there is literature out there that looks at, you know, people's perceptions of the impact of porn, surprise, surprise, people don't think it's a terrible thing for the most part when they're using it and they don't want to stop using it. Like there'd be a whole lot of cognitive dissonance going on there if they did. So they start to go, hang on, people don't think there's anything wrong with this. Well, yeah, that's true. People don't often think there's anything wrong with this until, you know, they experience the impact of it. And usually that's in a relationship context to some extent. Or because it's just gotten so extreme that they start to go, oh, or they listen to a podcast like this and go, oh yeah, actually maybe this is affecting me. But one thing that I challenge people to do when they're in that circumstance is to try stop using porn. And because most of them haven't. Why would they, if there's not a problem and they like it and, you know, that's just a part of their life. The amount of people that I've said that to and they've come back and gone, I couldn't do it. Like, it's clearly having an impact on you if you can't live without this thing. Why not? What's going on? Let's address that. And so if you don't think that this is impacting you at all, try and live without it. And if your life doesn't change at all, or maybe you're right. Maybe it's not impacting you. That, again, that doesn't mean it's not impacting other people. And, you know, based on that impact of, porn on society, et cetera, like, why do it then if it's not really having an impact, positive or negative? But what you'll probably find is when you stop, you'll start to notice things change, right? And either you'll really struggle or you'll go, wow, like, I'm so much more free. I have so much more capacity to think about stuff. I'm more productive at work. I'm more attracted to my partner. Like, wow, we're having such a great relationship now. The proof will be in the pudding, right? So go get the evidence kind of for and against, but you never get the evidence if you don't try. And it was actually, it's a bit of a bugbear of mine. Maybe this is getting a bit geeky, here, but, coming from a research perspective, when you're looking at these studies that kind of try and assess what porn addiction is and how prevalent it is and whatnot, usually those studies are based on people reporting how much they struggle when they're not using porn. But it presupposes, it assumes that you've actually tried to stop using porn. And I think the numbers would be far different to what they find, because they find that, you know, the levels of pornography addiction or problematic pornography use are quite low in the general population. But I think if the whole population tried to stop, those numbers would be far higher. It's just, if you haven't stopped, well, then I wouldn't have a problem. That's what everybody says. Yeah. So go and try it and see how it goes for you.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And certainly what you've mentioned, we have heard from many people how their lives have improved and how they have felt so much more free without pornography, having so much control in their lives and having healthier coping mechanisms for emotions and, you know, all of those things. Again, noting we also know how difficult it can be to overcome a struggle with pornography.
Absolutely. So yeah, it's not to say, you know, stop using and you'll be able to stop using, no worries, and it won't have an impact. But yeah, stop using and you'll work out whether you can do it easily or not. And if you can't, well, then there's help.
Yeah, absolutely. Is there anything else that you wanted to share that we haven't spoken about yet before I ask you our final question about hope?
Go for it. Final question.
Okay. What do you hope our listeners take away from your research and from this conversation when it comes to building healthy and connected relationships?
Mm-hmm. So the answer is kind of twofold here. The first part is that if pornography use or any kind of sexual acting out behavior is present in your life, in your relationship, then it is probably having an impact on that feeling of disconnection between the two of you. Or even if you don't even notice that there's a feeling of disconnection, it's still probably there that you're just not picking up on. Whether you realize it or not, whether your partner has an issue with it or not, whether you have an issue with it or not. So give it a try, and again, the proof will be in the pudding. Get the evidence for or against that. And then the second kind of aspect to that is, I would hope that, again, you're taking that sex is a really great thing. The sexual system is actually super duper powerful when it comes to relationship well-being. It's just got to be directed in the right way. And so we want to kind of turn that magnet back towards our partner, and make sure that, you know, everything within us is being kind of funneled in that direction so that we can make the most of that relationship. It's absolutely 100% worth it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for joining, Nick. I'm so grateful we were able to connect with you and share this conversation with our listeners. Do you want to share, if anyone wants to learn more about your research or your work, do you want to share where they can do that?
Sure. Research. So look, just Googling my name will come up with some the published studies that are already out there. As far as other resources, et cetera, you know, Googling my name will also come up with, you know, my practice details, et cetera, so they can contact me through email and whatnot if they would like additional resources, that kind of thing. But you'll find plenty of it online, just looking up the name. But yeah, thank you for having me, and thank you for the work that you guys are doing as well.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Consider Before Consuming. Consider Before Consuming is brought to you by Fight the New Drug. Fight the New Drug is a non-religious and a non-legislative organization that exists to provide individuals the opportunity to make an informed decision regarding pornography by raising awareness on its harmful effects using only science, facts, and personal accounts. Check out the episode notes for resources mentioned in this episode. If you find this podcast helpful, consider subscribing and leaving a review. Thanks again for listening. We invite you to increase your self-awareness, look both ways, check your blind spots, and consider before consuming.
Here at Fight the New Drug, we talk a lot about the impact pornography can have on mental health, relationships, sexual health, and the world around us. And if you've felt that impact personally, it's important to know this. You're not alone. That's why Relay exists. Relay is an app designed to give you real support as you work toward lasting change. It connects you with a small, private group of people who understand what you're going through, people who show up when it matters. Relay isn't about shame or judgment. It's about accountability, encouragement, and learning how to move forward together. And if anonymity matters to you, Relay has you covered. No names, just support. If you're ready to stop doing this alone, try Relay for free today at ftnd.org/joinrelay. Can I be honest for a second? A lot of people who listen to this podcast already know they want to quit porn. That's not the problem. The problem is doing it consistently, when no one's watching, when it's difficult, when it's late, when you're stressed. Instead of just relying on willpower, rely on our friends at Relay. Relay gives you structure, tools, support, connection. So you're not fighting alone and starting over every week. If that sounds like what you've been missing, check it out at ftnd.org/joinrelay.
Struggling with compulsive sexual behavior or betrayal trauma can feel isolating, not just for individuals, but for partners and families too. But healing is possible, and you don't have to navigate it alone. From June 25th through the 27th in Nashville, Tennessee, the Hope for Healing Conference brings together individuals in recovery, partners, couples, and professionals for 3 days of expert insights, meaningful conversations, and real connection. You'll hear from experienced voices in the field, gain practical tools for healing, and connect with others who understand what this journey can look like. Whether you're seeking support personally or professionally, this space is designed to meet you where you are. To learn more or register, visit csbdhopeforhealing.org and use code PODCAST25 for 25% off.
This episode is sponsored by Garden. Groceries are getting more expensive and somehow less fresh. If you're tired of throwing away wilted greens and overpaying for produce that doesn't last, it's time to grow your own. Meet Garden. It's a sleek, soil-free indoor growing system that does the hard work for you.
Using automated light and water, Garden grows fresh, clean food in your living room or kitchen all year long. No dirt, no daily chores, no green thumb required. Stop planning your life around grocery runs. Just harvest what you need when you need it. Visit mygarden.com. That's mygardyn.com. Garden. Harvest happiness.